We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
From Learfield, welcome to Flight Report, the latest news from EWU Athletics, spanning all sports, events, and key information. Fly with us. Now, here is your host, the voice of the Eagles, Larry Weir.
Welcome to Flight Report. It's where we talk about Eastern Washington University athletics. Each week, I'll talk to coaches, administrators, and occasionally players or even former players. This week, just two interviews for you. We'll talk to Eagle football coach Aaron Best coming up in just a moment or two, and then athletic director Lynn Hickey. She'll have a football stadium update and more for us. Before we get to those interviews, though, let's start with a game recap from Eastern's win over Montana State last Saturday. It was a chilly day in Bozeman, but the Eagles got on top early in the game. It was an 8-play, 75-yard drive that was capped by a Gage Gubru touchdown run, but this pass play set up the score.
Blitz coming, throws deep down the left side into coverage. Simba Webster, back shoulder throw, got it. And out of bounds, he goes inside the 5-yard line.
Montana State answered as Troy Anderson ran it in from 25 yards out, capping a 2-play drive, and it was tied at 7. The Eagles got the ball back and started a methodical drive downfield. 12 plays, 74 yards, 5:06 off the clock, and Sam McPherson scored his first rushing touchdown of the game, and the Eagles led it 14-7. Montana State drove back down the field 64 yards in 10 plays, but the Eagle defense held them to a field goal, and at the end of the first quarter, Eastern had a 14-10 lead. In the second quarter, Roldan Alcabendis booted a 24-yard field goal, and that put Eastern up 17-10. After getting a defensive stop, this play capped a 3-play, 58-yard Eagle scoring drive.
Pierce, the running back, he gets the call again up the middle. He goes inside the 10, spins, breaks the tackle inside the 5, still on his feet, into the end zone. Touchdown! Touchdown, Eastern Washington, to Merrick Pierce, a man on that drive with a 34-yard run. Then the penalty, then the 12-yard touchdown run.
At the intermission, Eastern led it 24-10. There was just a field goal in the third quarter of play, and it was set up by this play by the Eagle defense.
Anderson out of the gun, three receivers. They bring motion in from the left side. Back to throw it as Anderson wants to go deep, fires it deep down the middle of the field, and this ball is going to be intercepted by Mitch Fettig. He was the deep safety. Cassis tried to run into Fettig prior to the pass getting there.
10 plays, 52 yards, 3:54 off the clock. Alcabendis again, this time a 25-yard field goal, and it was 27-10 in favor of Eastern. In the fourth quarter, the Eagles put the game out of reach, and this run capped a 3-play, 57-yard drive.
Cage takes the snap, hands it to McPherson off the left side, turns upfield, breaks a tackle, 45-50, bounces outside on the left side, 45-40, 35-30, down to the 20, to the 15, to the 10, to the 5, into the end zone, touchdown! Touchdown Eastern Washington, Sam McPherson with the dagger.
McPherson's second rushing touchdown put Eastern on top 34-10. Troy Anderson scored midway through the fourth quarter, and the final score was Eastern Washington 34, Montana State 17. Statistically, the Eagles dominated the game. They had more rushing yards, more passing yards, more total yards. They also won the turnover battle, the third down conversion battle, and the red zone battle as well. Individually, Sam McPherson led the ball carriers, 9 carries, 74 yards, a couple of touchdowns. Gage Gubrud threw for 311 yards and is very close to 10,000 now in his Eagle career. He also passed the 11,000-yard mark in total offense in his career. And Kettner Cup led the defense with 7 tackles, 1 for loss. Mitch Fettig had 6 tackles and that interception. With the win, the Eagles have won 7 in a row now against Montana State. They are 2-0 in the Big Sky, 4-1 overall on the year, heading into this weekend's game against Southern Utah. Our pregame show starts at 11 o'clock with kickoff just after noon on the Eagle Sports Network from Learfield. Now let's get our weekly interview with Eagle head coach Aaron Best.
Eagle head coach Aaron Best joins us now on the Flight Report. Coach, great win for you last week, and it was a game that, you know, you guys won fairly easily against a good opponent.
Well, it was a good opponent, and they're even better at home. They were a big outfit from kicker to safety and everything in between, a very physical outfit. And obviously it goes to show you Coach Choate is kind of, you know, challenged those guys to this point in his 2.5 years there to be a physically dominant team. And it was a dogfight. Saturday was a dogfight both sides of the ball. They wanted to establish the run, and they did it early, a bit too easy on us. As a matter of fact, first couple series, we had to make some corrections and adjustments to get a feeling for what their schemes were going to present and how fast they were going to unfold. Mr. Anderson's a great player, shown on film for a year and a half. Not too many guys in the country play quarterback and then put their hand down and play defensive end and get a hit on Gage Gubrud in the red zone, and that's what he did. And I had no idea that he was in that situation until I talked to the old lineman in the bus on the way back home after the game. And so very, very good team. They're going to win a ton of games. That's a great environment to play in, and we're fortunate to come out on top, and it's sweet when you get off the bus 7 hours, head into town, get some food, put your head down, and get a win, and come back, and makes that bus trip a lot easier on the way back.
All right, so is it a lot like the Cal Poly situation in that the first drive or two, they were able to make it look fairly easy against your defense, but then your defense buckled down and they didn't score again until the fourth quarter of play? So, again, you can't simulate Anderson at quarterback. You can't simulate some of the things they do, just like Cal Poly, where you can't really simulate the triple option.
Well, you're right, Larry. And I think there are some teams that script their first 10 or 12 plays of the first 2 or 3 series. That first play was indicative of them taking a shot early. They got a big play. Big plays are going to happen. You want to minimize those, but I'd rather have it on the first play of the game than the last play of the game. And so we buckled down after those first two series. You're right, you can't simulate a guy like Troy Anderson in the backfield on a scout team, in a scout team setting all week long. You got to read down blocks and read pulls and read your keys and read the give or the pull of the quarterback. We just kind of were slow to the party early on in the game. We weren't triggering as fast as we could and as fast as we should. And once we did that, then we put a bagel up in the second quarter, a bagel up in the third quarter. And any time you put zeros up in two quarters of a game, we talked about this early on in the season, you have a heck of a chance to win, especially here, because we're going to have the tendency to score a fair amount of points. So kudos again to the defense. It wasn't awesome early, but it was awesome late.
The offense did a good job, especially early in the game, and probably you could have put up another 10 to 17 points, but you had some uncharacteristic drops and maybe an inopportune penalty or two there in the second half.
Yeah, I think those are the things we're giddy about to get back to practice on Tuesday and talk about in the team meeting. The two times we were inside the 5-yard line and ended up settling for field goals. And that's not where you're going to be successful at the end of the year if you continue to do that. One time early on, we were in a five-wide situation, ran the ball with Sam McPherson, got tackled for a loss, and that kind of put us behind the chains. And on third down, Jason Williams had a chance to beat somebody in coverage, did. We just didn't see it. We threw the ball late to Boston. They got a pass breakup and settled for a field goal, which in that moment, real time, Roldan Alcabendez becomes the leader in Eastern Washington University history after that kick, after that sequence. And then the one later on where we did score, where Gage did sneak in the end zone on third down, and we had a tug of a jersey by one of our players, which is unnecessary. But it was a penalty. There was an effort penalty. It wasn't a mental penalty before the play. So anything after the whistle or anything before the whistle, those are things that are very, very, very undisciplined. But I've never fault a guy for trying to be high effort just in a wrong scenario setting. But that did cost us 4 points because then we ended up kicking that field goal to get us up by three possessions at that time. So we got to shore some things up. Never perfect, but again, it's against a good team, a good outfit at their home place. Gets a little loud. Things are a little chaotic, and our guys did a great job.
Offensive line, again, does a great job. Near 200 yards rushing before the knees down at the end. And Gage didn't take a sack, and I don't know if he got hit more than a handful of times.
Yeah, he got hit a few times, but you're right. A lot of credit goes to those guys up front in a different way than the week before, where you asked about the 440 yards rushing. How well did they do? Well, they didn't have to pass protect a ton. This time around, we threw the ball more than we ran the ball, 41 times, as a matter of fact, I think, if I remember right. Zero sacks, and that usually starts up front, but that's also tight ends in the blocking scheme. Don't forget about the running backs in the blocking scheme, and then don't fail to mention that the quarterback can get out of some things as well. But I think overall, from a protection standpoint, against one of the sack leaders in the conference as a team, Montana State was, those guys performed fabulous up front, gave Gage an enormous amount of time, especially in some circumstances. And if we capture the ball on a few of those sequences, there could have been 7, 10, 14 more points left out there. But a very good job by that offensive front. Didn't have Tristan Taylor, won't have his services for the rest of the year. He'll be recouping from an injury. So Bo Bias stepped in fabulously. He's a fighter. He's a scrapper. He's a warrior. And on the other edge was Chris Schlichting against a guy, Bryce Dirk, that had five sacks coming in and left the game with only three tackles and zero sacks being the most important stat for us.
Roldan Alcabendez, you mentioned him earlier. Not only did he become the all-time leading scorer in Eastern history, but he's also the Big Sky Conference Special Teams Player of the Week because he had three punts downed inside the 20 out of his four punts.
Awesome. I mean, the double dipper. And, when I think of Roldan and what he's accomplished over his career, it isn't just the points. It's the adversities faced. He came in with an injury to Eastern, a soccer injury that set him back a little bit. And then he had the injury on the same field, a few years back that set him back a little more. And he's battled through everything. He's earned everything. Just a proud, proud moment to see him put that ball between the pipes. Didn't mention it during the game because we're all business. It's 60 minutes. We all got to band together. But after the game, we talked about that and what an accomplishment that is for him, his family, the adversity he's fought over the last seems like 10 years, but 6 years here, and it's accomplishment as a former long and short snapper that you can kind of share with those kickers because a lot of times they don't get the limelight. But him being the total points leader from the ground here at Eastern Washington, kicking and player of the week, that's just like an ice cream with a cherry on top. So congratulations to Roldan for the opportunity. And on the punting side of things, he's done a phenomenal job at this point, over exceeded the expectations, and that is okay if he exceeds those expectations. We go forward a monster punt late in the game to push them back inside their 20. So all earned, all prepared for, and right now he's playing all world.
All right, Southern Utah, they are a team that beat you in Cedar City last year, so it's started the Utah tour for the Eagles with Southern Utah this week, Weber State next week, two teams you lost to, and you'll have a chance for a little redemption.
Yeah, I don't – redemption, redemption. 17 is different than 18. They had our number last year. They beat us down in Cedar City. I talked to the staff yesterday. We had a few chances in that game to at least really stay in it towards the end. We had a deep ball to early on that we mis-executed. And we had a fourth down situation on defense late in the game where they ended up kind of running a rub pick route, you know, out of a trips setting that they ended up moving the sticks down in our red zone to kind of seal the game. And so we had our opportunities just to be there in the end. We need to do more than that this Saturday. We've got to do some things from the start, from the jump, and play better offensively, defensively, and from a special teams perspective. The special teams touchdown last year allowed us to stay in the game. We didn't make enough plays to allow ourselves to be in a really good situation towards the end of that third, early fourth quarter. And they have a great coach. Coach Warren's a great man, a great defensive-minded coach, and he was ready for us on offense. We just weren't in a rhythm. We were just kind of out of sync the entire way and couldn't muster things up after a decent start, I thought, to the game. But they're a good ball club, and they were, you know, Co-Big Sky champs last year. So they're going to be hungry. And what I will say, Larry, is – like Mike Kramer said, we've talked about this already, the first win is the hardest win. And just because they're 0-4 does mean that they're going to be hungrier for their first win. So the record doesn't indicate what they're capable of. They're only one game into their Big Sky Conference play, and they will be hungry because they're after their first win. So we've got to hold serve at home against a very good outfit that, yes, they did beat us last year, but I don't agree with redemption.
All right, so defensively, they lose a lot of guys on the interior of their defense. They're defensive tackles, which I thought really kind of made their defense go, but they have a lot of guys back.
They do. And that was kind of the first, once we flipped the page on Saturday on the bus, I was asking our assistant coaches, mainly Coach Buderak, hey, who's back? Is Torgerson back? I mean, and I know some of these guys' names over the course of the year. Is Peely back? Is Chinadu back? Is Needham back? All these guys in their front seven, because that was a formidable front seven. And like you said, their experience in their front four got taken last year. They graduated. They're done. And they were a menace to our society for a while. In a good way, because they make us better. They make you play that much better in those moments. But they aren't as experienced up front in their front four. They have experience at level two, not as much as they did last year, but they still have Chinadu in the middle, manning things in their 4-3 scheme. And then in the back end, I think that, again, this is the third straight week where I think they really trust that back four. I mean, they're going to get in your face. They had a freshman All-American last year at one of their corner spots. They are going to get in your face. They're going to be hands-on. They're going to play you quarters. They're gonna play you man, and they're gonna mix their coverages up well. Their corners will get in the run fits in the run game. They're not fearful, and that's indicative of their head coach and what he expects out of that defensive unit. So it's going to be something that we have to sharpen all our tools and get ready for them to bring their A game after a bye week.
Offensively, they lose their quarterback, but most of their other guys are back.
They do, and I think it starts from tackle to tackle for them. I think they came on the scene last year. They progressed as we followed their tenure of last year's games up to the point we played them, and I think from tackle to tackle, they got some guys that can make some hay. So when 5 of your 11 are really counted on in the run, in the pass, and in the screen game, they do a great job of mixing things up too. I mean, I think their run pass balance is like 51% to 49%, you know, and I don't think in a game you're thinking, okay, 1-1, 1-1. It just happens to be that way. So they're very, very balanced, and they'll come off script and run some trick-ems, if you will, some tomfoolery plays. Very innovative on offense, always have been. They like to get the ball out quick, but it all starts up front, and it starts with their ground game. They're going to try to establish the run. The quarterback, we'll see how things shake out. Don't expect their starter, the start of the season, to play, but we'll prepare for both and see how that unfolds. But what I've gathered is they had a heated battle to this point, those quarterbacks. So it's almost like you had a 1A and a 1B. So it's not like you're going from a fifth year senior to a first year freshman.
Coach, thanks for the time. Congratulations on a great win. Good luck this Saturday.
Thanks, Larry. Always a pleasure.
The next home football game is this coming Saturday, October 6th at noon against Southern Utah. Tickets are available. Go online to goeags.com for more information. Make your plans now for homecoming. It's coming up Saturday, October 27th, as the Idaho Vandals make their first appearance in Cheney in more than 20 years. Tickets are going fast for that game. Again, go online to GoEags.com for more information. The Eagle Football Coaches Show will be at Northern Quest Resort and Casino in their new Dinner in the Movie Theater. Coach Best will be there. He'll have film starting at 5:30 and then our radio show starting at 6 on the Eagle Sports Network from Learfield. The volleyball team is at home for the first weekend all season long. They have played in 8 states so far this year, but they'll be at home for the first time, hosting Portland State Thursday, Sacramento State Saturday. The soccer team is on the road at Idaho on Sunday. And the women's tennis team starts their schedule at the Gonzaga Invitational this weekend.
We continue on Flight Report now with Director of Athletics Lynn Hickey. Let's talk about last week, because we'll start with football and a great win at Montana State. I think it was your first trip to Bozeman, and you got to experience winter in September.
That's right. I'm going to start this with saying go Eags, okay? So that's our new tradition that we're going to start events with. It was a fun trip. It was a great trip because of how well the team played. It was a long trip, and you're right. When we got there Friday night and got off the bus, it was 39 degrees and the wind was blowing. But as the team was stepping off the bus, they were going, "Hey, this is what we love. This is us." And I'm going, "You guys are crazy." but they played really, really well, and so got to sit out with the crowd and wrapped up in blankets, but it was a lot of fun. The kids really performed well.
And so the Eagles go to 2-0 in the Big Sky Conference there. Let's transition over to volleyball. And these poor girls, they've been on the road every weekend of the season. They've played in California, North Carolina, North Dakota, Texas, Colorado, last week Utah, Washington, Utah and Idaho, I should say. And, you know, they're a little shorthanded right now, and so they lost a couple of games.
Right. They have this will be the first time they're going to be home for 10 days straight since the season started, so they're really excited about that. And we match up really well with Portland State on Thursday night, so hopefully that will be a good win for them, and then they can move forward. But Leslie's doing a great job. We knew that they're going to be a little shorthanded this year just because she didn't really have a chance to do any recruiting, and half the team are freshmen, so they were young anyway. But they're hanging together. They're playing hard, and so they'll finish strong. She's doing a great job.
They are 8-8 overall on the season going into the game on Thursday against Portland State. Soccer lost one and tied one last week on the road, and they'll play again at Idaho on Sunday.
A really talented group, and you know they had been chosen before the season started to possibly be the next champion in the Big Sky. I would just go back to their youth. If you look at their shots on goal every game since the season has started, they have sometimes doubled the opponents. We just haven't been able to get it in the goal to finish it, and that's probably more of a sign of just youth than anything else. But a great group of student athletes, and so they're going to continue to grow, and they're going to be dangerous as they go through conference play.
Women's golf was in Portland this week. They finished fifth overall. So the first time this year they didn't win the tournament, but they probably played against a little bit higher caliber team this week than they had maybe in the previous.
Yeah, I think they did. I think there were some conference teams that they were disappointed that they didn't compete better against. But, to win your first two tournaments, maybe they came back to reality a little bit. But they're a good group, and so it's going to be fun to watch them as they progress through the spring.
Men's tennis is now underway, but the women's tennis gets underway this weekend as well. They'll be in a tournament at Gonzaga.
Yeah, and it's going to be fun to see both those groups starting, and hopefully we can get some matches outdoors before the weather starts bad. The guys had some of the guys went to Tulsa to a special tournament, and they had some pretty good success. So, both groups, this is kind of the warm-up time of their season, and everything will really, everything that counts will really happen in the spring after the first of the year.
And something that's near and dear to your heart, being a former basketball player and basketball coach, is practice has started for both the Eagle men's and women's teams.
Yeah, this is round ball time of the year. You start getting ready and you start having countdown to that first game. I think both groups are going to do really well. The men's team right now has some injuries, and they might be a little shorthanded in preseason, but he's got a good group of guys. He's got some size, so that would be fun. And Wendy's got to, we got a make up for Bogdan on the men's side and Delaney on the women's side. So it'll be interesting to see how those kids fill in for them. But both teams are really excited, and it's just a fun time of the year to start getting ready for basketball.
I think we are less than 5 weeks out now from the first game.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I mean, we're already halfway through the first quarter, and, you know, we're starting to talk, you know, Halloween's coming up, and then Thanksgiving, everything's going to be on top of us before we know it. So it's been a good start of the year, and everybody, you know, we got everybody going pretty hard. Cross country's going well. And matter of fact, cross country, both meets, they continue to improve. And so they may be an interesting group by the time in another month when they go to conference. But Sam Reed, the new coach, has done a really good job with them.
And the Big Sky Conference we've talked about in the past, this is a really good conference for cross country. You've got the national champs in Northern Arizona sitting there on the men's side, and so many schools run at elevation. And so this is one of the best conferences in the nation for cross country.
No, it is. I mean, the national champion's been there, like you said, and Sam came in, and he thinks that we can compete. I mean, the elevation is important. I think the thing that we're missing is that we don't have all our scholarships in place on the men's team. And so if we can fully fund them, then the caliber of student-athletes that he's going to be able to recruit is going to change. But their times keep getting better. They seem to be really running well as a unit, which is kind of a unique thing in cross country. You think of individual runners, but they've got to run as a team. And it's kind of like biking races where you kind of work as a unit to hold off the competitors. So I think they're going to probably finish a lot better than we had anticipated.
So you talk about full funding, and that brings me around to fundraising and the Eagle Athletic Fund and how important it is for people to be a part of this so that we can fully fund cross country and fully fund many other things that the athletic department needs.
Yeah, I think we're getting ready to initiate a lot of communication on the Eagle Athletic Fund. I think, number one, there's a lot of people that really don't know what it is. I think when it moved from the EAA to the EAF, there was confusion. But what everybody needs to understand is the funds that are donated to the EAF are what help us operate, from scholarships to programming to how the teams travel to all the needs and resources in the training room to the nutrition station. If we don't have people give, we can't help put the resources in place for our kids to really compete at the highest level that we want to. So we're gonna really push that, and our goal is to get 2,000 members in there. So that's a significant jump from where we've been before. But we believe that there are enough fans and alumni and business leaders in the community that care about Eagle Athletics that we can get to that mark.
And we're talking not only individuals, but also corporate and businesses joining in, correct?
Yes. No, we can do things at all levels. And you know, it's interesting when I walk around and met a lot of people and walking around the tailgates, and they said, you know, we're ready. What, you know, we're just waiting for somebody to ask. Well, we're asking. You know, there's some real simple things you can do. Number one, buy a season ticket. Buy a season ticket, and whether you can come to all the games or not, then that contributes back to our funding for our operations. Number two, donate to the Eagle Athletic Fund. And if you have a need and a calling to work with one specific team to help them with a project, that's another way to give. But we are going to start working really, really hard to get messaging out to all our fans, to our season ticket holders, to the people that have given, to the people that used to give and have stepped away from us. We're going to visit with them again. But we need everybody on board if we want to move forward. And you know, we have an opportunity this year to actually play for a national championship in football. That's incentive for everybody to step in and help us to have all the resources that Coach Best and those kids need.
It's tough to add football tickets because we've pretty much maxed out the stadium size at this point in time, but people can make a difference by buying basketball tickets, which are on sale right now and are very inexpensive.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what was really surprising, as good as our basketball team is and as good as our crowds were, we only sold 250 season tickets last year. We've got to do better than that, and these teams deserve better than that. This is basketball country. And I really want us to get to the point that when I go run into an Eastern grad or an alum or a football fan, I don't want to hear about that they've we have to buy Gonzaga tickets. I want to hear that, hey, we're going to buy an Eastern basketball season ticket. What that would mean to our program and for those kids is just unbelievable. And it's not expensive. It's something that not only you but your whole family can be a part of. And once again, we will do a lot of outreach to try to get people engaged and to grow that. But it's just a very simple thing that you can do to help the program and the kids, and that's just to buy a season ticket.
And it would be great to get that number up to like 2,000 or something. That would be a huge number, you know, because you're talking now about bringing in $100,000+.
Yeah, I just would love to take the cover off of those top bleachers up there. You know, if you've ever been at Reese Court, then the top section, that one side, is covered with a big vinyl covering that's trying to make it look better because there's nobody in there. And we need to pack that place. We need to be the little darlings of the Cheney area. But as close as we are to Spokane and the basketball fans are there, and with the caliber of basketball that we're playing, we need to have people in the stands supporting these kids.
All right, so talking football and really not being able to grow much there because we've maxed out our seating as it currently stands. The university had an opportunity, and I believe on Wednesday, October 3rd, to choose the architect who will design the plans for the football stadium upgrade. What can you tell us about that situation?
We awarded ALSC Architects out of Spokane to do the renovation plan. So we've had one general meeting with them, and it was Coach Best was in the room, a couple of our administrators and facility staff here from the campus. And we walked them through the whole football operations area, and we sat and talked about what our needs are, what our dreams are. Next step will be is that there will be invitations given to people of different groups to be a part of focus groups, where we'll either meet here on campus or some of the groups will meet actually in the office of the architects in Spokane. And there will be a list of questions and just starting to gather information about what the needs of the fans are, what people would like to have see in place. Then they'll compare, they'll summarize all these answers that they get from the different groups, and then they'll take it back to the groups and say, you know, this is what we're hearing from one group, this is what we heard from you. And then try to really prioritize what things need to really be put in the stadium. We need to really bring forth a plan, number one, that is very doable, that we can have success in completing. Number two, something that fits within our financial package that, you know, you have to base it on what kind of fundraising efforts you've made before, what kind of donor base you have, what's the debt capacity of a department, of a university. And then everybody has to understand that under state law, this is not something that the university can build. Projects like this are built on donations, on funding, on naming rights, sponsorships. And so if we've got to put together a business plan, then that would fund these great ideas that we're going to come up with. So we hope to meet the needs of the venue itself, to make it a great fan experience, and to keep some of the mystique there, of course, of the red field. But also we hope that we can answer some of the needs that we have just for the student-athlete experience 365 days a year, from the locker room to the training rooms to the weight room. And you know, we may not be able to do everything at once, but we will have a plan that we can address all these areas so that we have a great, great field and just back of house resources for the team and for the fans.
So is this going to be a plan that is working with the existing stadium now, or could there be a plan involving a different site, whether it's the old baseball field or some other campus land?
No, the studies that have been done, the research that's been done, is that this is the best site. Where it's at is the best location. It's location, location, location. And then the infrastructure that's already built in there that will save a lot of money. For us to just renovate where it is and to grow that footprint. You know, the decisions that have to be made, and we'll know more as we get into the cost, is do you pick up and move the track out of there? And so we've got all kinds of ideas on how you could do that and what you would do with track and soccer. But we want to wait and listen to the needs of our constituents and to get the expert advice from the architects on how they could put this together and what we can afford. We want the very best that we can build, but we also don't want to overshoot and try to plan something that is not realistic, that we could never put into place. So it's going to be a really sound effort, a good effort, and something that we can be very successful with.
So this phase of talking, when does it start and when will it wrap up and when will the next phase, whether it's the actual design or whatever it might be, when might we see that?
All the meetings are going to happen in the next 2 weeks. So we're moving really, really fast. And then our hopes are to have a pre-design. It would be great to have it by the end of December. I don't know if that's possible. We'll know better as the architects go into this first phase, but at the latest, the end of January. So we're going to know right after the first of the year what we're shooting for and be able to put a business plan together on how we're going to fund that. And then that's when we will be going to all our fans and alums on, these are naming rights, this is what you can contribute, this is how you can make this happen. So. And then what you would do the rest of spring is do the full design. It takes time. It's very expensive, but we're moving as fast as we can. But everybody's going to know by in January what our dream is and what we're going to move forward with.
And then you also have to line up the potential people who can pay for it too.
That would help. Yes. So, you know, as we're moving forward, we're having conversations and, you know, but there and sometimes when you develop these projects, once you get the design, then it takes time then to you get the pre-design, the full design, and then you've got to start working with construction. I mean, these are not things that you turn around in a year. So this is 2-3 years out, and that's based on that you can gather the funding to get it started. So in the meantime, that's where we really need people to contribute to the EF fund so that we can take care of the operations and the needs of the kids now. There's an opportunity right now to help us in so many different ways. And then down the road, once we get the design and we know what we need to put down as far as payments and whatever, there's going to be another opportunity to contribute to the stadium. But we're really hoping that people don't wait for 2 years down the road to put a name on a brick when right now we need their help to keep the program going.
So one other bit of business, Lynn, and that's you have a new senior women's administrator.
Yes, Pam Parks had retired, and so we have worked the last several months to find her replacement, and really excited that yesterday we announced that Sarah Adams from Northern Colorado is going to come in and take that role. Sarah has a great background, has real knowledge of the Big Sky Conference, is full of energy, and is a different person than I am. She is very detail oriented. She has a great business background with numbers, and so she and I are going to be great partners. In that, when I'm doing the visiting, she can come in behind me and clean up and get all the details done. So we're really excited. She's going to start actually October 21st, and that's a Sunday, so that may sound weird, but that's when our fall conference meeting starts. So she's going to step away from Northern Colorado and represent us at the conference meetings, and then after the meetings, she will be here on campus.
Anything else that we missed that you want to mention?
No, just we need you at the games. We need you at the games. We need you to contribute to the EAF, and then send us information. If there's something that anyone thinks that we should be doing better, we want to hear from you. I would rather be hearing from people and getting suggestions. We don't want people just to be low key and lay back. So. Let's go after this, and let's make sure that we're building a championship program here.
Lynn, thanks for the time.
Thank you. Go Eagles.
Go Eagles.
We encourage you to buy season tickets to all Eastern Athletic events, including men's and women's basketball, which will be starting up next month. Go online to GoEagles.com, click on the ticket link, then go to men's and women's basketball. You can get season tickets for the men starting at $70 and season tickets for the women starting at $40. It's an unbelievable price, less than $5 per game for the men and less than $3 a game for the women. There are also many plans available, the family 4-pack and more. For more information on men's basketball tickets and women's basketball tickets, again, go online to GoEagles.com and click on the tickets link. You can listen to the Flight Report in many different ways. You can go to GoEagles.com, click on Fan Zone, then on Flight Report with Larry Weir, and listen from there. If you're a regular podcast consumer, you can subscribe or just listen through most of the major podcast sites like iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, CastBox, Radio Public, Pocket Casts, and iHeartRadio. We'll be back next week with another edition of the Flight Report. And thanks again to head football coach Aaron Best and director of athletics Lynn Hickey. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Flight Report. I'm Larry Weir.
You've been listening to Flight Report, the latest news from EWU Athletics, spanning all sports, events, and key information. Fly with us. The preceding has been a Learfield presentation.